WMD, RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one incredibly tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know that means it's time once again for Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike. And Nation, I've got to tell you, one of the great things about this crazy job that I have is that, you know, I get to literally not only stand on the shoulders of giants, but sometimes I actually get to meet them, obviously not exactly face to face. And today is one of those days. So after years of trying, I finally got, you know, one of my personal heroes on the show, Anya McAteer. She's from Ireland. She spent decades in the food and health area, traveling the world. You've seen her all over television, radio, etc. She's a chef to the stars, and maybe we'll get her to dish a little bit on that for us as well. I just can't wait to talk to her. Anya, thank you so much. I'm glad we finally tracked you down.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Mike. I'm thrilled. We've been trying for 5 years now.
We absolutely have. That's true. I think we probably actually passed each other crossing the pond back and forth.
I was just over in
Scotland. We did.
Yeah.
And your roots, I was just over in the UK in your part of the world, doing a little bit of research for a book that'll be coming out shortly, Food Shaman.
But
your roots run deep there. Yeah. You are from Ireland. And do you think that growing up where you did, how you did, and some of the food history, the food culture, if you will, of Ireland has influenced how you approach things today?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I grew up in a huge family. There are 11 kids. And one way it certainly influenced me is that there's always more than enough food. And, you know, when you grow up in a big family like that, you always just dive in because you're always a little bit scared that there won't be any food left for you. and also, we grew up in a farming area. We didn't have a farm, per se, because my dad was a local school teacher. But we grew up with, you know, surrounded by farmers. Our milk, everything was fresh, straight from the farm. We grew a lot of our own veggies. We had a beautiful orchard where we grew all our own fruits. So that was definitely, you know, a big influence. The whole, you know, the farm, it's funny how things come back, and now it's
right.
Very trendy to eat farm to table. But a lot of it's just it's how we grew up.
Did that influence you, or did you go through a phase where maybe you moved away from farm to table and said, you know, hey, you know, I want to get some of this exotic ingredient or that exotic ingredient? Or rooted in your childhood, have you always had a predilection, you know, to get that fresh farm to table, that natural sort of a produce and product?
You know, that's always sort of the foundation of what I do. But of course, you know, growing up, I was always a little bit adventurous. And I remember when I was a teenager, I decided to become a vegetarian. And I mean, the reason actually was my friend's father was a butcher, and I saw him slaughter a cow. And, you know, it just didn't, I loved my cows, and I loved milking my cows, and I loved milk. I'll get into that a little bit later because I discovered that my love for all things creamy was kind of at the root of a lot of health issues. It was a little bit later on I discovered that. But I became vegetarian, and I actually upped my intake of milk and dairy products and became quite sick. Growing up, I always had sort of lung problems and you know, congestion, sinus problems.
Right.
I had pneumonia, bronchitis, and but it wasn't until I started to research it a little bit that I discovered that I was actually intolerant to a lot of these foods I grew up in. And it was actually back in the 70s in Ireland that I first discovered macrobiotics, and that to me was quite exotic. You know, we were away. It was actually around the time that I'd been diagnosed with having an underactive thyroid, and I was also dealing with all these health issues, you know, they're constantly getting coughs and colds and flus. And back then in the 70s, we didn't really have Google to research, you know, get all our information. So I was walking around Dublin trying to find out. I'd moved from the countryside where I grew up, really trying to research a little bit, going into bookstores, looking at bookshops, but we just didn't have the information.
Holy cow. Bookstores.
I know.
You are dating yourself now.
I miss bookstores. Next thing. But I remember walking into this place. It was a building, and there was a group of people there that told me they were getting ready to open a macrobiotic restaurant. Now, that really got me interested because I always loved something a little offbeat, especially I was starting to develop an interest, you know, in food. And, you know, of course, I grew up helping my mom cook, but she did a lot of the cooking for 11 kids. These people, they just look so radiant and healthy, and I really felt they're onto something. So I talked to them about my thyroid issue, and they said, oh, you need to stop eating dairy, you need to eat seaweed. You know, and of course, it's an island. We grew up surrounded by the ocean, and so, you know, I grew up inland. So we had carrageen moss. It was one of my granny's go-to medicines, making these drinks from carrageen moss.
Which is a hot thing nowadays,
seaweeds
and whatnot.
That I was sort of discovering and exploring back then, and back then in Ireland. I remember I had gotten a job in the Bank of Ireland, and at the same time I discovered macrobiotics and was exploring this whole macrobiotic diet thing. And I discovered also eating with chopsticks. That was a thing we did, and I thought that was very cool. But I remember, you know, in an environment like the Bank of Ireland back then, if you didn't take sugar in your tea, you're a little suspect. But when you sit at the lunch table, you're eating brown rice and seaweed and adduki beans with chopsticks, you're definitely a weirdo. But, you know, I ended up leaving the bank and working in the restaurant for 2 years. And during that time, everything changed in my life and health. I stopped getting the coughs and colds. I used to keep everyone awake at night coughing, and I just stopped getting sick. And like my sinuses, they were constantly congested. I could actually breathe through my nose again. And I realized that the delicious foods I grew up on were actually not really benefiting me. So it was a really hard thing for me to actually realize that I was intolerant to the butter and the sugar and the cream. I still have butter, but, you know, so my whole sort of journey sort of focused on finding substitutes for the foods that I loved. And I discovered that it really is possible to eat in a different way. And, you know, I kind of enjoyed the whole weirdness of it. You know, now it's, like we said, now it's very trendy. Everybody's, you know, being vegan or raw food or paleo or whatever.
Gluten-free, whatever.
These days. But back then, it was very, you know, we were definitely renegades and we were the weirdos.
I want to ask you something. So you mentioned sort of that dairy intolerance, which is very interesting because given the genetics of folks from that region of the world, those folks sort of, genetically speaking, are the least likely to become lactose intolerant just because of that. But I'm curious about your tolerance or your desire, or have you eaten, you know, aged cheeses? Because, of course, Ireland produces some of the best, you know, cheeses in the world, along with some of the best butters.
Yes.
And folks that are lactose intolerant, a lot of times it's to a milk protein.
Right.
And, the greater a cheese is aged, the less likely that protein is. It's a fermented living food. Same thing with butter, which is more fat, so it has less of that protein. And sometimes folks are out there now and they say, well, I can't tolerate milk, and they stay away from all milk products. They sometimes have no problem with some of those other things. What has been your experience?
Yeah, and you know, that is actually something I'm sort of coming full circle and getting back to. I got, you know, after I got into this whole macrobiotic thing and then I became a very exclusively vegan chef for about 20 years or so. And then working for clients, I started becoming more flexible. And that's one thing my clients always teach me is, you know, being flexible, being healthy, and really presenting food in a way that's relatable to people, but still keeping it clean and healthy. And I have started exploring, I mean, the whole fermentation thing is something that, you know, I've been very intrigued by for many years. And I do find, like, the kefirs, even if they're made from dairy, I can definitely tolerate much better.
Wow.
And I've been finding sources, too, for getting raw milk. And I find that raw milk and cream, I don't get the same reaction as when I drink just regular pasteurized.
That is fascinating.
And
it goes to something that you're hitting on, which is the natural probiotic and in some ways symbiotic relationship of, you know, these natural foods when they're not processed like that. That raw milk, you know, it contains, it's a living food.
Exactly.
You know, and it's very different than, you know, the super ultra pasteurized stuff that, and I understand that folks in the modern world, sometimes we have to ship those things, but it gets back to, you know, one of the emphases of the new book and something that, you know, is really a cornerstone of my part of the world. When I get out and try to talk to folks is that, you know, food is not food. It differs tremendously in quality. And we understand that in so many parts of our life, right? We know the difference between a Volkswagen Beetle and a Ferrari.
Right.
We don't say all cars, you know, we get the difference,
exactly.
You know, but when it comes to food, and particularly, you know, in my world where folks try to study the health effects, it's red meat. Well, my gosh, you know, you've got grass-fed beef on one hand, you've got something that barely resembles meat, this, you know, pink goo at the other end, and there's no way you can compare them.
Exactly. There's a couple of things. I think it's also for me, I was addicted to sugar growing up. And that combination, I think, is quite lethal.
Absolutely.
I can use a lot more natural sweeteners. And also the red meat thing. I was vegan for many, many years and actually became quite depleted. And I was in a very, very busy job for about 4 years, traveling with actors around the world. And it was very intense and very busy. And I had an acupuncturist when I was on one location in London. And she pretty much begged me to eat red meat. Because she was, you know, feeling my pulses, and she just felt that I was not doing myself any favors by being vegan and living the lifestyle I was living. So I did. We were filming out in Pinewood Studios outside London, and I was living in this house over. It was overlooking a field of beautiful sheep, and I ate lamb. And I remember feeling so bad. But I did it in a very ritualistic way. And I had her eat it with me. And we set her massage table. And we blessed the food. And I thanked the lambs in the field. And I ate it. I remember just getting it, this jolt of energy.
The practice that you just said.
It was a different kind of energy. And I used to feel a little sort of dizzy and spaced out. That's the only way I can describe it, spaced out. It just gave me this feeling of being grounded, which is interesting.
Well, what's very, very important and is actually, again, another part of the book, which, you know, I will be sending to you and hopefully you'll enjoy it. And I'd love
so
to have
excited.
A few words from you if you did.
I love
but the,
your writing so far. You're, it's
oh, thank
just,
you.
You're an entertainer when you're, it's like, it's entertainment. But it's so informative.
Well, you definitely know that world, and I want to get to that in a second. But I do want to hit on what you said, because that the way you ate, how you ate that lamb, also makes a huge, huge difference in how our body responds. And in fact, I devote a chapter to how we eat, talking about exactly what you did, the mindfulness, the gratitude.
So
and there are some studies coming out, showing that very powerfully affects the physiology of our body. So
absolutely.
It's this idea of what I call the food experience, which, again, you're decades ahead of me on, because you just talked about, you know, I thought I had discovered something when I was writing a book, and here you are telling me, oh yeah, I did that, you know, 10, 20 years ago. But your practice is really on. You were ahead of the science, if you will, and now the science is starting to catch up and show that all those things that you're doing and all the things you were talking about and how you, you know, create that ritual, that ceremony, that meal, that food experience for your clients, you're actually giving them more nutrition, more positive physiology than they get from the mere nutrition of the food.
Oh, absolutely. And one, a huge thing for me, and it's something I have a really big focus on, is the energy I put in to prepare. I meditate every day. I've done it for 30 years. But when I'm offering somebody something, I want it to come from a really good and a pure place. And I feel, and I notice and I observe, and it's amazing, when I'm in a really good place and I'm really happy cooking the food and putting that energy in the food, people are affected by it. I actually had one client said, I'll name drop a little bit here. It was Robert Redford.
Okay. Oh, please do. Please do.
Yeah. So I cooked for him on Kauai, and I was supposed to cook for him this one day, and I was sort of prepared for that, but he arrived a day early, so he needed some food. So I brought him my leftovers from the night before, sort of repackaged them a little bit and put it together and dropped off the food. And the next day I arrived to cook, and he came into the kitchen and he was so excited. He said, "You know, Anya, I never think of myself as a spiritual man, but when I ate your food, I had a spiritual experience." He said, "I don't know what you put in that food, but I felt it." You know, and I said, "Well, you're obviously a spiritual man if you can really feel that sort of, you know, that energy in the food, you know, you're." But that was, you know, and I feel that in my work, that, you know, where I'm coming from. Like, I never want to eat the food from an angry chef.
Oh, gosh, no.
Because I've had that experience, too, and it's very indigestible.
So you've never frequented a Gordon Ramsay establishment then?
I love Gordon. I see him on the beach here in Malibu all the time. I remember thinking, is Gordon stalking me? Then I was at Nobu and he was there with his family. But yeah, I mean, I don't know about eating his food, but yeah, I think that's just his TV persona. He's probably
I know.
Always seems really friendly and mellow when I see him around.
I've never met him. I actually have eaten at his restaurants, but you know, I've heard sort of along the grapevine that it's very much a persona, and he's actually you know, a pretty good guy.
Yeah, I think he has a house in Malibu because we walk the same beach sometimes, and he just seems really chill and really friendly and nice, you know. But he has this persona that is like, wow, do I want to eat that food?
How did you get into you know, the rarefied air that you travel in now? You know, starting from, you know, Dublin in the 70s, you know, to where you are now, and feel free to name drop. I'm going to let you do that, cuz I know there's some that you want to mention, some that you can't.
You know, a lot of my clients are fairly iconic, and, you know, they really wouldn't want me out there talking to them, cooking them, preparing blah, blah food today, which I am. But, you know, so I have to, you know, out of respect for my clients, I can name dogs a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But it's interesting question because, you know, I'm really not the ambitious sort at all. I have a passion for creativity. You know, and whether it's food or fabric, I make clothes, I make jewelry, you know, it's kind of my driving force. And, you know, somehow I tend to just fall into these things. If I go out looking for something or trying to make it happen, it just evades me. It doesn't happen. If I say I want to get a job, it doesn't work for me that way. Things just seem to come. And it's interesting, when I was in my mid-20s, I had a palmist read my hand. And he was, like, back then, it was, like, £100 or something. That was, like, you know, a long time ago. But he read my palm, and he said to me, "You're going to be surrounded by rich and famous people in your life." And he said, "If you're ever intimidated, always remember they need you more than you need them." So, I don't know. It must have been faded. Who knows? But I, you know, I look at my life sometimes and I think, gosh, this is kind of weird. Here I am, this little Irish chick, and I'm, you know, in the kitchen of these people, and they're wanting me, and they're willing to pay me for doing what I do, and it kind of blows my mind sometimes. But, you know, and I've really had to remember that a lot, that these people need me more than, you know, more than I need them. And sometimes when you're going into the house of these people who are so iconic and so big, and I remember having a dream once that when I was going to cook for these clients, a very high-profile celebrity couple who I was with for 4 years. It was actually the Cruz Kidman family. And we leave it at that. But I remember having a dream. And in the dream, I was in this kitchen and everything was huge. I was cooking for these giant pots. I had to stand on ladders to reach up to it, cooking these giant vegetables. And then in the dream, my client comes walking down and he's this little guy and he's sitting on a bucket looking up at me. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, there's this whole world that seems so huge around these people. And it's very true. It's kind of how it is. You know, there's everything is glamorized and glorified by, you know, in the media, but, you know, they're just regular people. And you know, I'm really there just to help make their life better just through the food I'm preparing for them. And I feel very blessed to have that opportunity to do that because I'm doing something that I love. And also the travel element of it where, you know, you're going on location and it's a little bit bad habit forming because you usually have when you go on movies with clients, you sort of have an unlimited budget to work with. So
that is spoiled.
Prices. And you know, and then your perspective kind of slips a bit. I remember when I started cooking for those guys, spending the first year, I think I spent $250 in a dress and thought, oh, damn, I'm really losing it here. And then a couple of years later, I spent $1,000 on a dress and didn't, you know, so you forget you're not the star, that you're just the chef.
Well, so, but, you know, I think that the platform that you have either really you've earned it, I think it's come to you through your passion, you know, through your artistic success or your artistic brilliance, but it's given you a platform to get out and deliver, I think, a very important message. You know, I know you travel the world and you, besides the cooking, you also teach. And a lot of the elements, you know, that you put forth, I think are very important. I know you and I see eye to eye on a lot of these. And I wanted to ask you about one of the things you do, because I want to come to your next one myself, is, you know, this idea of wildcrafting and foraging. Yeah. And you talk about an unlimited budget, you know, so what in the world, you know, propelled you from the upscale supermarkets to, you know, to traipse through a field or a wood or a brook, you know, a glen to get some food?
That's where I'm happiest, Dr. Mike, to be honest. You know, I grew up eating those foods. I grew up making nettle soups, eating nettle scones, you know, and like I said, the carrageen moss that we harvested. And, I mean, we're constantly rambling, and you know, it was always blackberries, and that's how we made our money as kids. So I grew up eating a lot of these natural foods that were grown in the environment, but we lose touch with that as we kind of go out and everything becomes commercial. So I've been really enjoying just going back to Ireland and reconnecting with that. There's a group down near where I live. They're this couple, Mary White. She used to be the leader of the Green Party in Ireland. So she left politics and got into this whole wild food thing. And her and her husband, Robert, there's such an amazing wealth of knowledge. And they run these wild food summer schools. So they've been pulling me in to, you know, work with them on that. And she'll bring foragers in, like people who are very knowledgeable and have written books on foraging and wild foods. You bring them in and they'll pick the foods and talk about the foods. And I mean, this one guy, we just stood in this one spot and there was so much just around us that we could eat. So we picked everything and then I'll show people. I even partnered with a beer company, a local beer company, a brewery in Ireland, and did sort of beer and wild food pairings, which was really fun.
Yum.
I had to bring all my dishes into the brewers to taste. And it was interesting just watching their whole take on what goes with what. So, you know, I've been very much part of their whole summer school program that they do over there. That's really exciting. And then I have something that I'm really aspiring to do is bring people, bring groups over. I have a Facebook page called Feast and Forage Ireland. And, you know, bring people over because there's so much wealth. I just love, I mean, have you been to Ireland?
I've been to Northern Ireland, but yeah, I'm hoping that in the next sentence you're going to invite me to be part of your group there.
Also, you know, we've talked about the whole Ballymaloe cookeries. We need to do a tour. So that's one thing I'm really looking at is bringing groups over and showing them the beauty of Ireland. And
Anya, where can folks go to get that information?
It's BlackStairsEcoTrails. .ie. I can always email you that information.
We're going to get that up in the newsletter, which will come out. So if you look in your newsletter, we'll have all this contact information.
Right. And then there's I go on walks with here in LA called Pascal Boudoir, but he's a Belgian guy who's written a beautiful book called The New Wildcrafted Cuisine, and his wife has written Ugly Little Greens, and I go and walk with them, and he's had me eating ants and crickets and all kinds of things. And his website is Urban Outdoor Skills. So in the LA area, that's really a great thing to do.
And it has been the time's gotten way too fast. It has been such a pleasure. Do you think I can get you back on in less than 5 years from now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we should do a show from Ireland.
I would absolutely love that. As I said, the book will be coming your way, and I think we need to get some plans together for next summer. Folks, stay tuned. You'll get all that information in the newsletter. Check out those websites Anya was talking about. Again, what a pleasure to be with one of the, in my mind, and a lot of other folks, one of the real true culinary geniuses, culinary giants that's just been an educator and an inspiration. And Nation, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.